No, I think I'll just paint.
I put it up here, too, just in case.
Oh, that's it. Good. Okay.
And
that's
here's the words here in case you don't have them.
Yeah, I got that. Okay.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to church this morning. My name is Gail Borman, and I have been a member here for two and a half years now. Yeah, time flies by when we're having fun. You are invited to stay following this worship service for fellowship, conversation, and refreshments in our fellowship hall, the Kate Worker Room, just through these doors behind me. And if you are a newcomer this morning, we extend to you a special welcome and hope that if this is your first time to visit, you'll consider entering your name on one of the visitor cards that can be found in the back of your hymnal and placing the card in the offering plate or handing it to an usher. If you'll do that, we'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about all the programs and activities that are going on here at church. Also, we are going to celebrate the life of Nelson Shaner after the service today. And now, I invite you to turn to your neighbors and greet them, especially the ones you don't know yet. Okay. I draw your attention to the announcements in your order of service. We hope you'll keep these things in mind as you plan your upcoming week. And I invite you to move to the microphone and share briefly any joys, milestones, or concerns you may bring with you to church this morning.
You want to go first? Yes.
My name is Alex Heft, and my joy is this past week I was at what's called MUSA, Midwest Unitarian Universalist Summer Assembly. It's for all ages. You spend a week at Trout Lodge, and it's absolutely amazing. You know, workshops from kayaking, riflery, and archery to meditation, dream interpretation, and it's absolutely everything. And we filled the camp with UUs for a week. I kind of want you guys to go, because I was the only one from our church there. So I'll try and remind you next year.
Good morning. I'm Kleber Van Zandt, minister of this church. I have two announcements. I'm trying to get one here on my phone. I got an email from Sarah Drury Dothager, who she and Jason and the girls just moved to the Washington, D.C. area, and she says that they are doing wonderfully. They've got some sick relatives here in town, but they're glad to be there. They're doing a lot of things. They go to the beach every other day in their neighborhood. Sarah drives into work seeing the sunrise over the monuments in Washington, D.C. She says she can't believe this is her life. One of her sentences is, "The move has been crazy and heartbreaking to leave all our family who aren't doing well, but we are blessed to be settling in and getting to spend a lot of time with the girls, so we miss that entire family." On a sad note, our longtime member, Georgiana Ragor, died this week. Some of you may remember her being here an awful lot with Gene Eaton. She has been hospitalized for several years, it seems, a couple of years, and she finally has passed I will let you know more about the arrangements for that memorial or funeral when they are made.
Thank you. The prelude will begin our worship service as Meredith Cock lights our chalice. To worship. Come into the circle of love and justice. Come into the community of mercy, holiness, and health. Come, and you shall know peace and joy. It will be hymn number 66, When the Summer Sun is Shining. Sit down. Please join in responsive reading. It's in your pamphlet. What does it mean to be religious? It is the round of common everyday life that to many of us religion must have meaning, if it is to have any meaning at all. But in the lives we live in the home, the community, and in the world is the religious way of life to be found. Community offering will be now for the Alton chapter of the NAACP. We have been greatly blessed, so let us now give generously so that others might be blessed by the work of the church.
A certain way of doing things. My kids come home, usually they take their shoes off, and then they'll do a snack, and then probably their homework, and then they want to go play. But sometimes, but sometimes you might go to a friend's house, and you realize, you know what, they have their snack first, and then they take their shoes off, and then they play, and then maybe they do their homework. It's a little different.
And then
maybe they take a nap. And you might think, wait, that is not how we do it at our house.
I went at a friend's house.
Did you?
Uh-huh.
It's kind of fun when you go to a friend's house, you see they have all different ways of doing things. Is it wrong? No. It's just different. But what I want to show you today, you could sit right here. What I want to read to you today, I'm sorry. What I'm going to read for you today is a story about ladybugs. I bet you've all seen ladybugs out there. I've noticed quite a few in my garden. Ladybugs are super interesting because they're a little bit different in the bug world.
Yeah.
But you know what? I got a book and I'm going to show it all to you. Ladybugs like to... Can you sit down a little bit so everybody else can see? Ladybugs like to crawl on leaves and sometimes on people's arms. They are the small members... Yep. They are the small members of the beetle family, usually less than a quarter of an inch long. They come in lots of colors, from red to brown to black, and many of them have small spots on their wing covers. Ladybugs are gardener's friends because they eat small insects that destroy plants. But ladybugs have some very strange ways of doing things. They don't have noses. Do you know that? No noses? But they smell with their feet. So instead of having smelly feet, they use their feet to smell. And they do have mouths, but they taste the things with their antennas. So can you imagine tasting things with your fingers? That's kind of like what ladybugs do. It's different, isn't it? That is new. The ladybugs, do they? The ladybug's way of doing things is different from ours, but she gets along very well. People like to do things differently too. Not everyone likes the same thing or do. But they like to do things different from us. We think they are wrong. Sometimes when people do things differently from us, we think they are wrong. We think our way is the right way. But God reminds us that we should enjoy our differences and not criticize others. Sometimes it's fun to try to do things a new or different way. We might learn something we didn't know before. So maybe next time you see somebody do a little bit something different than you, maybe look at them and think, oh, I learned something from that person, and maybe doing it a different way might be just as fun. So today I want you all to go to your religious education class, and we're going to learn all about different religions this summer and different ways that different religions do things. And hopefully we'll learn something important from that religion too. So we will see you after the service. And now we'll have a reading, Mary.
The more fully we know the holy, the clearer and more grounded we will be. Confusions and irrelevancies will fall away. Our energies will be more focused, and we will be able to be more creative and more productive. Our hearts will open wider, and we will be able to be more generous and more compassionate. The reality of our connectedness to one another and to all of life will be felt more deeply, and we will be moved to more responsible living. The more fully we know the holy, the more we will be healed of old angers and hatreds, and be able to forgive those who have hurt us. The more fully we know the holy, the richer and more fulfilling our own lives will be, and the more we will give to the people and the world around us to deepen and enrich their lives as well.
I would like to take a moment for meditation, but unfortunately, Gail walked off with my meditation paper, so maybe... Is that it?
Yeah.
Here, I'll grab it really quickly.
Mommy! And we have a child emergency, so we'll just take a sec.
All right, maybe we have a little quiet now. I'm going to read to you a poem that I'd just like you to reflect upon. We'll have just a few moments of silence afterwards. From all the fret and fever of the day, let there be moments when we turn away, and deaf to all confusing outer din, intently listen to the voice within. In quietness and solitude, we find the soundless wisdom of the deeper mind. With clear, harmonious purpose, let us then bring richer meaning to the world again. Amen. If you would now stand and join me in hymn number 297, The Star of Truth. You may be seated. Good morning. I'm Tracy Howe Koch, a relatively new member to Alton Unitarian Universalist Church. I have been a Unitarian Universalist for about 10 years now. And in those 10 years, I have been asked many, many, many times, so what do you believe? I imagine many of you who have been brave enough to publicly declare your Unitarian Universalism have also been asked that. Or perhaps you've kept your Unitarian Universalist faith within the family, but your child has come up to you and asked, Mom, do you believe in Jesus? Will I go to heaven when I die? These types of questions can lead to a sense of panic in many UUs. We often deflect them with clumsy answers and hope the situation disappears. Or we hope that the children's religious education department education classes will eventually provide some sort of answers to life's difficult questions. I find many of us, though, tend to answer these spiritual questions in the negative. For instance, well, I don't believe in Jesus as my savior, or I don't believe in a heaven. Maybe we even go a little deeper and say, well, I really don't believe in an organized patriarchal religion. And my God does not discriminate on the basis of race, class, and sexuality. Those are a whole lot of negatives. But does that really give you a clue into what at heart we believe? What do you believe? Some of us cringe at the word spirituality. We are devout humanists, agnostics, and atheists, and we don't see any room for spirituality in our lives. But like it or not, we are spiritual beings. We have all wondered, why are we here? What does this all mean? Some of us push those questions away. How do we even begin to answer them? Others spend their whole lifetime devoted to seeking these answers. Because of our humanity, though, we will never really know. But how we choose to live our lives, we can fill the emptiness that almost all of us experience at some point. Spirituality can be a very ambiguous term. What does it mean exactly? For this sermon, I would like to use the definition that Frederick John Muir uses. Spirituality is the word used to describe the interdependent workings of both the spirit and the soul. Spirituality is about the inner dimension. It is what is deep inside of us and how it manifests itself in our lives. I love this definition because it is so intensely personal. It does not require a belief in a higher being, but the thought that there is something holy and sacred in all of us. Many of us have come to church because we are looking for something more. That something more is spirituality. We are looking to fill our soul. Why should we be bothered to explore our own spirituality? I come to church. Isn't that filling the void? I like what the minister says. I feel connected to all you people. I get involved in all the wonderful social action projects that the congregation participates in. Aren't we all about deeds, not creeds? I am doing those deeds. I feel good about helping others. I am contributing and living my values. I am leading by example. Hopefully those pesky questions will just disappear and people will just see that I am a good person without all that baggage of creedal spiritual beliefs. I am free and happy. I think we all realize, though, that life throws us curveballs. It is hard to see a grace in the beautiful rainbow when your life is stressed out by work, health, and family, and church becomes just one more thing on that to-do list. Where do you go when you've had enough? What do you fall back on when you need strength and hope? For more creedal religions, it is easy to turn towards scriptural doctrine. Just have faith. God has a plan. What do you do, though, if you aren't sure you have faith? Where do you go when you just don't know? How do you answer your child's need to feel to feel secure in something. Spending time nurturing your spiritual side can lead us to be more centered, happier, able to handle stress better, and lead a more meaningful life. We only get one chance at this life. Why not make it the most fulfilling it can be? Jean Neuinger, in her book, The Gift of Faith, notes that spiritual well-being, hope, faith, and inner peace all contribute to physical well-being. It has been well documented that people who are devout, who are clear in their faith, who are meaningfully connected to religious communities, and who are actively engaged in prayer and meditation recover more quickly and fully from serious illness and injury. The Reverend Barbara Wells observes that her spiritual practice helps her stay centered on who I am, why I'm here, and what I am to do. I believe I am a better person because of the spiritual path I have chosen. Thus, not only does an active spiritual practice provide practical benefits, it also helps fill the deep and need for greater meaning in our lives. And who wouldn't want that? I need to take a moment here and also make a special appeal to parents. You are your child's primary religious educator. Sending them to Sunday school is just one small aspect of nurturing their spiritual development. We only have them here for, at the maximum, 40 hours a year. Where are they the rest of their lives? With you, family, friends, and a million other outside influences. Children are innately spiritual beings. Whether you help guide them or not, they will find answers to these questions. I remember a spiritual crisis I had when I was 13. All of a sudden, it dawned on me, out of the blue, that I was just an insignificant speck in this universe. It hit me like a thunderbolt. It was a full-blown existential crisis in the middle of South Dakota, of all places. I would have loved it if my parents had been open to different theological discussions. I think it would have provided me a lot of comfort that summer. Neuinger states, though, parents should take seriously their own religious grounding first, their own religious education, their own spiritual nurture. Only then can we provide our children with a deep and unified faith that will follow them into adulthood. It is yet another reason to pursue your own spiritual development and practice. Exploring spirituality and establishing spiritual practice can seem very daunting. Does it require special equipment? Do I have to walk in the woods and commune with nature? Do I have to pray every night? The beauty of spiritual practice, though, is that there's no one size fits all. There are many ways to delve into spirituality. The Reverend Scott Alexander considers spiritual practice to be any regular, intentional activity that serves to significantly deepen the quality and content of your relationship to the miracle of life. Reverend Wells broadens this thought to include three components: personal devotion, finding a mentor, and worshiping in communion. I find these definitions really encompass what I believe is important in spiritual development. To me, personal devotion has to be regular. Now, regular can mean once a day, once a week, or once a month. Others may find, but it's something that is consistent. Many find that prayer and meditation are invaluable. Others may find that their morning run to be the most spiritual part of their day, while others journal in the evening. When was the last time you heard silence and just could be alone with your own thoughts? In our overconnected world, we are often hard-pressed just to be alone. I challenge you all to find just 10 minutes in your day to devote to some sort of spiritual activity. These can be the above-mentioned ideas or uniquely your own, but something that brings you more deeply into yourself. If you are feeling that you need some more guidance, participate in an adult religious education class. I've taken many of these, and I believe Reverend Van Zandt will be offering one in the fall, and have found them wonderful starting points in my personal meditation and prayers. Remember, there's no one prescribed way. Reverend Wells also suggests finding a mentor. When I read that, I wondered exactly what is a spiritual mentor. Then I realized that I've had actually several of them, but I considered them friends and hadn't thought about them in those terms. To me, a spiritual mentor is someone I can freely bounce off my ideas. They challenge me and question my thoughts. They listen to me and I listen to them. There's no right or wrong, but just an ongoing dialogue of discovery. Hopefully the mentoring is mutual and you can both deepen and broaden your spiritual practice. Mentors can be found at church, in chalice circles, or even friends of different faith traditions. I have even found some of mine through a theological book club I participate in every couple months. You may be surprised at how much you learn when you put yourself out there and your beliefs. The discussions can be quite dynamic and enlightening. It just requires a little bravery on your part. Finally, worshiping in community is one of the best ways to deepen and discover your spirituality. Coming together in the spirit of communion connects us to the greater whole. We are not alone in this world. Our lives have greater meaning, and worshiping together helps us realize that larger focus. We are in this together, we celebrate and mourn together, we grow and love together. Whether you are in a church, conference, or retreat, coming together nurtures our souls and is as important as an individual practice. While spirituality can be deeply personal, being with other people who support your choices can be very life-affirming. I have briefly listed three aspects of developing a spiritual practice, but I want to reiterate there really is no right path. There are as many paths as there are people. The path you choose now may not be the one that you need later in life. Almost every great spiritual leader has explored many different ways to their spirituality. The Buddha is an excellent example of going from one extreme practice to finding peace in the middle way. It is okay to try several different methods. If journaling doesn't work for you, try yoga. Just make sure to give it some time. Spiritual enlightenment doesn't happen overnight, if it happens at all. Like most things, it takes practice and commitment. Lastly, start small. Make little changes at first. A spiritual practice is not an all-or-nothing venture. One small thing my family does is we light a chalice at dinner time every night and say a grace. The chalice connects us to our faith tradition, while the grace helps instill gratitude for the food we are about to eat. I especially like this tradition because it demands that we are all at the table, settled and focused. It also, in a small way, helps the children connect with their own spirituality. It is a sacred moment for our family. Spirituality and spiritual practice are lifelong pursuits that begin when we are born and are instilled when we are children. In your order of service, you may have noticed I've included some spiritual homework. I encourage you to take a moment to reflect on some of the ideas I have listed and choose one to put in practice. Obviously, you don't have to, but I would highly encourage it. My hope is for all of you to live the most meaningful life as possible. We may never be able to answer all of life's hard questions, but we do have a soul that needs to be filled. Whether you choose to fill it up is up to you, but the benefits of a happier, more centered life are hard to ignore. Please give this gift to yourself and your family. You deserve it. Thank you. Now, if you would join me in hymn 112. Please stand if you're able. May our faith sustain us, our hopes inspire us, and love surround us as we go our separate ways, knowing that we will gather again in this beloved community. Amen.